We're going around the conference looking at Pac-12 football recruiting today. Why has Arizona State fallen off so hard on the recruiting trail? And can they get back? We'll discuss with John Garcia Jr. of Sports Illustrated, the director of recruiting, for that and a bunch more insight. Let's go.
Locked On Pac-12, your daily podcast on the Pac-12 Conference. It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Locked On Pac-12 Podcast. I'm your host, Spencer McLaughlin, D1 play-by-play broadcaster and fan of the Pac-12 Conference writ large. Joining me today is John Garcia Jr., the director of recruiting for Sports Illustrated. Thank you for making this your first listen or your first view every day. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your number one source to stay up to date with the Conference of Champions every weekday. Like and subscribe wherever you're listening to and or watching this show right now. If you want to leave a comment on Apple Podcasts or YouTube, appreciate all of that as well. And get used to hearing this guy's name, everybody. John Garcia Jr. has got all the recruiting insight you could ever need. I send him wildly unreasonable requests to get information on and insight on recruits, and he's got it all. John, welcome to the show.
Good to be on with you, Spencer. Let's talk Pac-12.
Let's talk Pac-12 and start with a team that is coming on tough times, at least in the recruiting sense. It's not very often I think a Power 5 school can have an 8-win season and then follow it up with the 103rd ranked recruiting class. But that's what Arizona State has done. So before we get into a couple of names in their class of 2022 and, you know, whether they could have any impact players in that recruiting class, which I have to imagine is one of the lowest, maybe the lowest in school history. What has happened to Arizona State on the recruiting trail? I mean, you and I were talking off air before we came on. There's no reason that the Sun Devils should ever be last in the Pac-12 in recruiting behind, you know, Cal, where it's a tough place to recruit, or, you know, Stanford's done a surprisingly good job, but they're getting beat by Arizona by a mile, or they're way behind Colorado, UCLA, and Chip's not a huge recruiter. We'll get to him later in the show too. Like, how has Arizona State just fallen so down on the recruiting trail?
Well, Spencer, you know, all things even, ASU wouldn't be so far down on the recruiting trail, but all things aren't even at this point. Obviously, there's a lot of transition going on, a lot of turmoil going on at ASU. There's still an active NCAA investigation. You know, Herm Edwards has come under plenty of fire, like at different points. You probably wouldn't have been surprised to see him relieved of his duties, but here, you know, he still is. A ton of assistant coaches have come and gone, depending on who's been named in part of these scandals. So there's a lot, of course, going on off the field with ASU. On the field, they still profile like, hey, former NFL head coach in place, a lot of pro mentality in that coaching staff, and good players, certainly, given the you know, footprint of ASU recruiting and what it has been when the Sun Devils have been rolling. But it's understandable, you know, especially in a time where schools are taking less high school recruits anyway, transfer portal, all these other things going on. You know, you're going to be more apprehensive about a school like ASU. And I think that's why you've seen so many departures, both on the roster and in recruiting. Now, at one point, they had like a really nice class of 2022 on board. And then all of these extraneous circumstances have started to pop up. And you get naturally a ton of defections. And you've seen a lot of former ASU commits ending up elsewhere. And that's just kind of the nature of recruiting. Perception in recruiting is king, Spencer. So when it starts to go south on a national level, it really turns off recruits and in turn those around them, right? High school coaches, parents, administrators, etc. So it really can free fall in short order. And that's exactly what we saw last year at ASU.
Yeah, it feels like they have no momentum, right? Or at least no positive momentum, that it's snowballing, but sort of in the wrong direction. Whereas a school like USC with the big hire of Lincoln Riley, that feels, you know, more positive, even though the recruiting class this year is not very good. Oregon has been able to salvage their recruiting class remarkably well. And it feels, you know, they get Josh Connerly, they get Kyler Casper. They're now in the top 15 nationally with those late 2022 commitments, right? That feels like positive momentum, but ASU seems to be going in the other direction. So how do they get out of that funk, right? How do you reverse course when you're a program that's in that state?
it's going to have to go back to the fall. It's going to have to go back to winning, Spencer. I think when there's a lack of credibility and a lack of expectation in terms of the stability of your head coach, it really stunts your growth from a recruiting standpoint. So if you get out on the field this fall and start to lose a couple of games, now that doubt is lost. That benefit of the doubt, I should say, is 100% lost, and it becomes a lame duck situation, and then recruiting is all but dead at that point. So I do think a strong start is probably necessary for ASU to rebound. Some clarity on the NCAA situation this offseason would help. Now, to depend on the NCAA for anything in a timely fashion is not smart. So I don't think that Herm Edwards and company are going to get the benefit of that doubt. So the next best thing would be to handle what you can handle, which is finish up the spring, get into the offseason, redistribute, your scholarships, because it seems like the portal is going to remain a big and busy option for every school. And then go into the fall full force with all your chips on the table, because the Sun Devils have to win to start to reverse some of this perception. But unfortunately for them, the NCAA's got a lot of power in this conversation. And until they finish things on their end, I don't know if perception can be salvaged at ASU under this current administration. You know, were the guys who were relieved of their duties, were they the scapegoats, or were they just the beginning of the problem? I think if I'm asking that question, imagine what prospects and their families are asking of ASU. Again, there's no lack of talent on that coaching staff. The roster's still good too, right? You obviously Jaden Daniels moved on, and that was like the shocker of the offseason, maybe in the entire Pac-12, but there's still talent on that roster. So if you can get some wins on the field this fall, I do think that you can begin to rip the Band-Aid off, but that wound isn't going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, I think I read recently that their over-under win total is kind of in the 7.5 range. I think if they go over that, it could go a long way, not just to salvaging Herm Edwards' time as a head coach, but also, helping them get some legitimacy back on the recruiting trail, because it's just down. And you can have, I think one class like this one, obviously, for the Sun Devils, that is just not going to bring you a whole bunch of top players, and you can, survive for one sit. But if it starts to snowball into 2 and 3 years where you're falling behind on the recruiting trail, odds are you're going to fall behind on the football field as well. And I'll ask you who the best players in this class of 2022 are and what some potentially high impact players could be. But first, I want to tell you all about Built Bars. If you haven't tried the Puffs, they're the first ever protein infused marshmallow. You know, the things they use to make s'mores. Imagine if you just worked a bunch of protein into that, but also took out a bunch of the sugar, kept all the flavor, and had a bunch of amazing flavors. Most Built Bars have 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, 17 grams of protein. That's why I put them in my golf bag. And you can see, big golf guy here. Life is full of important choices, is what my shirt says. And there's 5 different golf clubs for those of you listening on a podcast right now. I put them in my golf bag to keep me going on the course, and you should too, or wherever you need them. Go to built.com, use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. Not a lot of potentially high impact players in this class of 2022 for the Sun Devils. There's, mostly 3 stars. There's 1 4-star we'll ask you about in a moment, because with Rashad White leaving, they're going to have a bit of a gap at running back down there in Tempe. But they hit the transfer portal fairly hard, had, some success, brought in some guys you could project being, a starter or here or there. Who do you think among the guys that ASU brought in via the portal could have the biggest impact this fall?
Well, I think we're going to have to wait to see how the portal shakes out in the spring. I think there was an opportunity to bring in guys in the portal who could play immediately just because of the attrition on the current roster. Certainly, I'm looking at the quarterback position in general. I think at ASU, how do you navigate post Jaden Daniels? I'm not quite sure. You do have a freshman that I know we're going to talk about here in a minute. But yeah, I think the portal still remains to be seen with ASU. You could sell, hey, I'm playing for coaches with NFL experience, but I'm also, kind of going into a situation that is relatively unknown in terms of going forward beyond the spring. So I think there's still a lot to be seen with ASU. And it's hard to get excited about any prospects in particular through the transfer portal, because we have to see how they assimilate to the current roster. But I do think we're going to get more clarity here in the offseason. And I think one of the benefits of the transfer portal, we talked about ripping the Band-Aid off, you can use that to patchwork some holes on your team offensively or defensively. And I think ASU will have to address that going forward.
I think one name to watch for that they added in the portal is Nesta Jade Silvera, the defensive lineman from Miami. It was a really, really highly graded four-star coming out of high school. Didn't play as much as he wanted to at Miami, transfers to ASU, and his transfer grade, which I think is a fascinating component of the portal, guys grade one way out of high school, but then after you see him play in college a little bit, they grade differently. He's still got a four-star rating, but it's, you know, lower than what it was when he was coming into Miami as a true freshman. So I think that's a name to watch for. But real quick, we'll wrap up on ASU, then we'll get to UCLA and Chip Kelly. Tevian White is the headline freshman recruit in this class of 2022. With, you know, a little bit of a void potentially there at the running back position for Arizona State, is Tevian White, is he the sort of guy that could come in and make an impact right away?
I do. I mean, this is a big physical back. And I think when you talk about transitioning from high school to college, it's easy to fall in love with the smaller, shiftier, speedier guys. But when in terms of dealing with Power Five football, It's the big physical backs that are able to transition and make an impact immediately because they can physically handle it. And I think Tevin's got a lot of those traits. He's over 200 pounds, over 6 foot tall too. So he's not a smaller
6'1"
back. Yeah. Coming out of the state of Virginia, where obviously there's great high school football. I think there's an opportunity there for him. He's a little bit of a throwback, which again, when you're transitioning, obviously a quarterback, you're transitioning a ton. You know, you need to rely on a running game. And I think the safest bet is a decisive north-south kind of cat, and that's what Tevin White projects like. And he might be a workhorse type, a guy you can give the ball to 20 times. Not a home run hitter per se, but does have some subtle quickness to his game and can open up his stride a little bit on second and third level defenders. But you like the physicality, running behind his pads, kind of an old school style to his game. And I think that could be useful at a school like ASU going through so much transition. It can kind of help steady the ship there, in my opinion. So I definitely would look for him to make an impact.
Let's switch gears with John Garcia Jr., the director of recruiting for Sports Illustrated, and move a little bit further west in this West Coast-based conference, of course, UCLA. Now, here's the interesting thing. Chip Kelly's never been known as a great recruiter, per se. Like, in a broad sense, right? Like, he's brought in some high-level players, mostly on the offensive side of the ball. And so we'll get to a defensive guy that his team has coming in the class of 2022 in a second. But you don't think of him as a big-time recruiter. You think of him as a really good scheme guy on Saturdays, and that's what he became known for at Oregon. But sometimes he does bring in a high-level offensive player. And so Greg Dulcich is a guy who he got to pop the last couple of years. He's going to get drafted in the NFL. He was a big play tight end. And now with his departure, you kind of have a void at that position. Four-star tight end Jack Peterson. Is that the sort of player that you think could become a Greg Dulcich type? Or is he, you know, sort of cast off a different mold as a tight end?
I think he can make some of those same type of plays that Dulcich made. Obviously, Greg was a polished guy, had been on the team for a few years to develop as opposed to a freshman in Jack Peterson. But this is a modern new age tight end. You know, he's 235. He's not one of these 260-pound end of the line tight ends that you're asking to be an extension of your offensive line. You know, Jack Peterson can play in space, which is where we saw Dulcich make such a big impact. And obviously, getting Dorian Thompson-Robinson to come back for like his 15th year at UCLA seemingly is a huge deal on top of that. You know, when you talk about an outlet, you know, Dulcich was his outlet, right? That was kind of it's hitting the fan, you know, where can I find Greg? I don't know if Peterson can assimilate to that as a freshman from a reliability standpoint, but from a flash standpoint where you're talking about making plays and starting to build your resume, I do think Peterson has some of those same traits. And I think before they got Justin Martin committed at quarterback out of Inglewood, you know, Peterson was really the class headliner all the way through for this UCLA class of 2022, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. Like I said, he can play that H-back position where he's off the line scrimmage a little bit. We know Chip Kelly likes redirection and some outside-the-box type stuff on offense. So I think when you counter with a guy like Jack Peterson, you can throw him shallow and allow him to run after the catch there as well. But he also has the frame, if you do want to bulk him up, to where he can be a little bit more of a conventional tight end. But usually offensively, conventional is not the word that you think of with Chip Kelly. And that's why Peterson was such a big target and eventually a big commit for UCLA. I think he makes an impact early this fall.
What about Kamari Ramsey, kind of the top defensive recruit, at least in the secondary in this class of 2022, pretty highly rated, 4 stars, got good size. What sort of impact could he make this year for the Bruins?
Yeah, I think that's the side of the ball that you're wanting to see come along a little bit for UCLA in 2022. And Ramsey's got a lot of balance to his game. You know, like you mentioned, good size. And I think he's got a versatile skill set that where he's very comfortable coming downhill. But, you know, he's a modern safety who's willing to play in coverage, got good range off of the hash, and can play the football to a degree. But I think his combination of ability to come downhill and play physical football will help in the Pac-12. You think of some of these programs, you know, conventionally we think of the Pac-12 and the Big 12 as like this throw happy league. And I think that's starting to change a little bit. You know, Oregon over the last several years has moved into much more of a balanced offensive approach. We know what Utah is going to bring from a physicality standpoint. So if you want to win the league, you've got to be able to play physical defense and come downhill at the second and third level. And I think Wilson brings some of that already as a true freshman, but he is no slouch in the cover game as well. I think he can play that three-phase ability that every good safety has to in this day and age. You kind of have to do a little bit of everything, and I think he's got the frame and the game for it.
Yeah, you mentioned running the football. I, as an Oregon fan, know as well as anybody that Chip Kelly wants to run the ball first and foremost. And I want to ask you about that and kind of his reputation on the recruiting trail writ large with UCLA. After I tell you about Bet Online, your number one source for all your betting stats and sports info. Find all of the latest sports developments with Bet Online, your continued source for all your sports wagering information from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. Bet Online is where the game starts. No secret that Chip Kelly wants to run the football. And he's always recruited the sort of guys over years that fit his scheme, right? Back at Oregon, it was, you know, primarily speed guys, right? On the offensive line, on the perimeter as well. That's kind of what he became known for. I've noticed a shift in tone since he's gotten to UCLA, bulking up a little bit more. You know, back in the day, it was LaMichael James, DeAnthony Thomas. Now it's Zach Charbonnet and Britton Brown leading the backfield, right? That's a little bit. He's still, you know, the same sort of guy fundamentally, wants to do the same sorts of things, but he's doing it with a different style of players. But one thing that Chip has in terms of reputation is he's not all in on recruiting. He doesn't love recruiting. I think that's, you know, mostly a fair assessment, but I want your insight on kind of his evolution as a recruiter and the sorts of players that he's brought to his program. There are some similarities, but there are some differences as well. And then also, you know, he's not known as a great recruiter. And is that a fair way to assess him as a football coach?
Well, when you see, you know, the game kind of passing by on the recruiting trail when he happened to go to the NFL right around that same time, really hard to go back on that opinion. And I think, you know, there's a self-awareness element of it as well. I mean, at Oregon, you can recruit nationally. You're the flashy kind of new kid on the block, new school, modern, like every kid loves your uniforms, kind of trendy school. A lot easier to recruit nationally and offensively when you're that. At UCLA, totally different academically, different demographic. You're the little brother in town, much less in your state. So it's a totally different approach. So you go from national to regional. And I think that's where the sort of culture of Chip Kelly was put into question early on at UCLA. The fit was one of those that made you say, oh, kind of like what people were saying about Brian Kelly at LSU. It's like, oh, okay, Chip Kelly to UCLA. Okay, we'll see how it goes. And I think he's subtly adjusted to that, where he is recruiting more regionally. Obviously, the state of California, incredibly fertile, but you got to go into Arizona. You got to go into Vegas. You got to go into Bishop Gorman and pull prospects out of there as well. So I think he's made that approach to a more regional one, but you still have to recruit nationally if you're UCLA. And I think that's where the Chip Kelly offer doesn't have the same weight with this generation recruit like it did 10 years ago. UCLA becomes, oh, this is a nice academic offer, Pac-12 football, we're in LA, which NIL will help a school like UCLA. The perception of marketing in that city obviously can help you, but overall, it's not the same weight. It doesn't carry the same weight as it did at Oregon, where that offer felt like a big national offer, where now all of a sudden the Ducks are immediately a contender for me. Well, UCLA is like, oh, this is a nice offer. Like, maybe I'll take a visit, as opposed to that Oregon offer where it was like, I'm definitely taking a visit to Oregon. Like, this is not even a question. So I think changing that perception might be tough. Which is why I think the refocus regionally does make some sense for UCLA. But there's no doubt that Chip Kelly, as a head coach recruiter, doesn't have that same oomph as he did at Oregon, or the same oomph as the current top head coaching recruiters in the game, when you talk about Sweeney and Saban and Kirby and those guys nationally. Even the younger head coaches that have come up in this modern recruiting era, you think of a Dan Lanning, you think of a Luke Fickell, you think of a Matt Campbell, even a Steve Sarkisian, that have kind of hit the ground running from the recruiting standpoint. And I think that's where we maybe oversold Kelly when he left the NFL to come back to college football. I think there was a big gap in time there, and we're maybe still seeing the effects of it.
The good news for him is he's in Los Angeles, and you make a great point about NIL, is that's a much easier selling point than, say, the school we're now going to transition to talking about, Cal Berkeley. And that's a tough place to recruit. It's a tough place to win as well, because they've got some stringent academic standards. And they've been, I think people often forget, because, you know, of the way that they've been the last, you know, 8-9 years or so. But there was a time with Jeff Tedford as a head coach where they were a top 10 football program in the country. So they're capable of getting there, but they just haven't been. I mean, the recruiting is just, it's difficult. It's really, really tough. That reputation is out there, and I think it's completely fair as well. But there are a couple guys in this class of 2022 that Justin Wilcox and his staff have brought in who might be the sorts of players who we hear from either pretty soon or in the near distant future wearing the Cal Bears uniform. And first guy I want to ask you about is on the offensive side of the ball, and that's four-star running back Jaden Ott. And I want to start on offense, because that's always been the thing holding Cal back under Justin Wilcox. They've been a respectable program, not great, but not, you know, totally awful either. They went 5-7 this past season, and they've, you know, had winning seasons under Wilcox, but the defense is always there, but the offense is what has been lacking. And so let's start with Ott. What does he bring to the table for Cal and the Bears offense?
Jaden is a smooth running back, Spencer, and I think that's something that is needed at a school like Cal. Like you said, known for defense, so you might be in more white knuckle games where it's touch and go. You're winning 21-17, and you need a steady running game to counter that defensive profile that you might project. And Jaden is a smooth running back that can pick up yardage in chunks. I think he averaged like 10 yards a carry as a senior. But you watch his tape, and you remember, and I don't want to do this in the wrong context, you remember Reggie Bush, right? Where like he's running along the sidelines and you're like, is he even running? But then like, nobody's catching him.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Jaden Ott has this smooth, like, you think he's just casual, but nobody's catching him when he's down the field as well. He's got this California cool that he's got with his running style, but he's extremely quick. He does have good long speed, even though it looks like he's jogging sometimes. I think that's the way he functions. I think that's just the way he picks him up and puts him down. So there's a sneakiness about Jaden's game that I really like. There's a subtle quickness about his game that I like. I mean, he can make that first defender miss in the hole just as well as he can make that first defender miss down the field, by flipping his hips. So I think Jaden's game is a versatile one. It's a modern one. It's a space game. But I think the subtle quickness, good vision, and smooth style can really profile as that offense looks to modernize going forward. I think he could be a true three-down back, and that's something that Cal needs.
Yeah, and they have to figure out the quarterback position as well. Yeah. But, I mean, they year in and year out with Wilcox, who knows defense and is able to bring in quality players on that side of the ball, he's got him as one of the top defenses in the conference literally every season. But the offenses have just been so behind where they need to be in order to contend at a 9-10 win level in the Pac-12 North, which has been dominated by Oregon the last several years. But no surprise to see him bringing in Justin Wilcox, that is Cal's head football coach, a quality player on the defensive side of the ball. Now, if you hear that an edge player who can make an impact is transferring to Cal, that's not a surprise. I am slightly surprised that Xavier Carlton would leave a place like Utah? You know, if you told me he was coming from one of the Washington schools or Colorado or one of the Arizona schools right now, I would, you know, not be quite as surprised. But what is Xavier Carlton going to bring to Cal and that defense? How do you think Wilcox will want to use him?
Well, he's going to cross train as an edge and a kind of a traditional outside linebacker. So I think when you talk about adding value to your profile, when you do make these moves in the transfer portal, even when they're surprising, that could be a reason in addition to coming back home to California. But Carlton has cross training ability as a pass rusher and a guy who can sit back in the second level and play coverage, which I think is a little bit more of what he did at Utah. So I think cross training a little bit with that maturity can bring you more flexibility as a coach and with the aggressive style that Wilcox likes on the defensive side of the football, it makes him valuable in attacking from different standpoints. If you are comfortable attacking from depth like Carlton already is, you already have an advantage against the opposition because you're not just a one-trick guy. It's like NASCAR, right? If you're an edge rusher and you're just used to coming off of one side of the football, you're turning left like a NASCAR driver all the time. But when you're blitzing from depth and you've played some traditional linebacker, you can approach it from multiple angles and really diversify that pass rush portfolio. You combine it with instincts, timing, all the stuff necessary to be a good linebacker, and it could make you a good edge rusher and vice versa. So I like that cross-training plan for Carlton. I think he's going to bring maturity, experience, leadership to that defense. And like you said, if that's the profile of Cal football, you need to keep an influx in talent. And if you can get an experienced guy to come in and do that, it just helps you streamline that process, especially when you can do so in spring ball like Carlton's been able to do.
Yeah, and he just joins a line of Cal linebackers and edge players, but particularly linebackers that have just been super, super productive over the last several seasons. So I certainly understand how, you know, the appeal is there. I mean, if you think great defenses in the Pac-12, I think you probably go maybe Utah. I mean, I would think of Cal first, honestly. I don't know about you. Ooh. I'd go Cal first and then probably a Utah, Washington in there, and then Oregon is somewhere in the mix as well. Just in the last several years, they've been so, so good statistically, and you watch them play and you're like, boy, that's a fast, physical team, and they're very, very well coached. Wilcox knows that side of the ball super, super well. He's not an offensive guy, and we talked about the offensive struggles, and you look at the recruiting class for Cal in 2022, and, you know, they don't have sort of, you know, we talked about that's the offensive headliner, right? But there's, you know, a myriad of 3 stars who are below him on the offensive side. Is there a name in there that Cal Bears fans and, you know, fans of the Pac-12 conference and other teams as well that should maybe be aware of that they perhaps haven't heard a lot about? Like, kind of who's your sleeper in this class for Cal on offense?
Well, earlier you said there's kind of a jumble at quarterback for Cal. And to me, that means watch the portal, right? Watch the attrition that's coming, because in terms of trying to figure out who your guy is, usually there's consequences for the pecking order thereafter. So I'm looking at a quarterback like Fernando Mendoza, who was the last addition to this class of 2022 from Cal, flipped from Yale. So you're getting a smart quarterback prospect. I've seen him in person multiple times. He won a state championship in Miami in the state of Florida, which says a lot. But this is a 6'5", smart, accurate quarterback who's got good footwork for that size. So I think, you know, when you think of the best Cal teams, a lot of it does go back to the quarterback position. So I think going away from that Yale education to go to the West Coast to play football was a big leap of faith, and kind of the kid betting on himself athletically. And I like that. I like kids who take chances. I like programs who take chances. And Mendoza and Cal kind of found each other very late in the game. So I think he's a safe, high floor quarterback prospect who's a big physical quarterback who, if he is thrust into action sooner rather than later, can handle managing an offense like Cal's in the short term. But I do think he could be a developmental option after all the shuffle goes down at the quarterback position. So it may not be in 2022, but down the line, keep an eye on Mendoza. I think he could be a nice little sleeper in this class. And if your sleeper is a quarterback, you know, that says something about your staff's ability to evaluate. So I'm a big fan of his and a big fan of that late get for Justin Wilcox.
John, your inaugural appearance here on Locked On Pac-12 did not disappoint. We appreciate the insight. We will have you back on the plan is every single week. I mean, you might get bored of me eventually, but I think that we'll just find reasons to keep bringing you back on somehow, some way. Appreciate it, John.
Always a pleasure, Spencer. Take care.
I appreciate all of you listening and or watching the show. See you next time and have a wonderful rest of your day.